Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, the original K-State sports show. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to another edition of the PowerCat Podcast, the podcast that almost didn't happen. We apparently suffered a power surge in the storms that happened yesterday in this area. Prayers out to all of our friends in Westmoreland who got hit pretty hard by a tornado, including JT. JT, we're thinking of you, man. One of my followers on the Twitter machine, a good K-Stater. So, but I think we've got Zach. I think everything's working. I haven't heard you talk yet.
Everything should be working.
Gills.
And you can hear Gills, right?
I can hear Gills. Oh my gosh, we got a podcast.
All right. We better get on with it.
We got some equipment to replace, but we got enough here to do a podcast. We're sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Make sure you check out the Fridge whenever you come to Manhattan, Kansas. It's just a wonderful store if you're into having a good time. And Lord knows most K-Staters are. So go check out the Fridge if you're interested in wine, bourbon, vodka. They've got experts in everything you might need. And they also have all your party needs, including mixes and lemons and limes and plenty of guys named Mike. Go check out the Fridge at the corner of this or that in the town in which we live. Let's get going with this podcast. Mr. Gilbert's on the schedule. He's a working man. He's a working man. So he's in between shifts slinging drinks.
And now I'm going to sling some words.
Yeah. Let's get going. Zach Carlson.
Got some basketball questions. I named this the Gills half since we don't know how long he's going to be able to be on the podcast.
Gills might only be with us with a half.
Imarica, what should our concern level be regarding the departure of Day-Day Ames?
I think you can intertwine kind of RJ into this. We'll touch on that in the next question, but I don't know if concerns may be the right word, but, you know, Day-Day and these guys want to play. And if they're not going to be, I don't want to say that they're not going to compete and they don't want to be promised minutes. I don't think anybody on that team ever wants to be just promised minutes. They want to work, but they want to have a realistic shot, a chance for those minutes. And I don't think that these guys departing believe that they were getting that. Now, there may be some truth one side or the other, somewhere in the middle. Who knows what goes on behind those closed doors. But, you know, concern, I'm not sure if that's the right word. You know, Day-Day Ames is replaceable. With all due respect, he's a tremendous athlete, four-star recruit out of high school. He is going to be replaceable, though. You know, the fact that he only played, you know, he started the last month of the season, right? But he wasn't a surefire starter to start the season, right? So he wasn't a perfect player by any means. I think if he stayed at Kansas State, absolutely, he would have gotten better and matured and grown and flourished in this system, absolutely. At the same time, though, you can go out, you know, Doug McDaniel, the guys that they are getting, it's not the end of the world to lose Day-Day Ames. So I think it's sad, but maybe a little frustrating that this is happening with these high school recruits that are coming in for a year and bouncing. It just sucks to see, but I'm not necessarily concerned about it. It just kind of is what it is at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gills. You know, if you break down a basketball roster, you've got five positions on the floor. And if you really look at how Jerome Tang uses his lineups, there's quite often a difference between the fours and fives and everyone else. You know, sometimes you'll see them take an Arthur Kaluma and slide him up to the four, or a David Gasan and slide him up to the five. There's a little of that. But for the most part, you're looking at these rosters and you're probably going to have five scholarship guys for those two big man spots. And you know, the other eight go into the backcourt. And it probably seems overwhelming if you're sitting there and they keep adding backcourt players. But if your goal is to at least get to seven, you're not there. You've got to add more guys. And I don't understand why players wouldn't understand that. You can't play with a 10-man roster just to appease your players. The other simple truth of it, college basketball has become about veterans and playing veterans. And you can sprinkle in a young guy here and there and get them experience, which we saw last year with Day-Day Ames. But at the end of the day, the older you are, quite often the better you are. You understand the game. You understand what it takes. You understand the work level. That's not to say all freshmen fall into that category, but I think we're seeing, and I don't want to say they don't want to compete and they don't want to work, because that's it. But they also think they've got a step up on anyone new coming into the program. And while in theory that might sound good, that's not how any level of athletics works. The best players get to play. So go compete and prove you're the best. But we're going to see a lot of turmoil on basketball rosters. And for Jerome Tang, I know a lot of people are upset at the amount of turnover. And I feel like Day-Day and RJ leaving is a step back, but he's got to get his young guys to be old. And then you'll start to see more stability. And unfortunately, that isn't happening with two of the three guys from last year's freshman recruiting class. And honestly, the one guy that's still here is the one we thought might leave.
So right.
It's been an interesting offseason. Mikaela Bridge is the one who is seeing it out, and I think he's going to get plenty of playing time.
Yeah, I think it is concerning to see these guys leave, but at the same time, this is the status quo of college athletics. You don't hope that guys, I mean, it's them staying is not a sure thing anymore, and you've got one season with the guys you have, and if they decide to come back, you know, great, but I don't think you can expect, you know, even a guy like Day-Day Ames, who seemingly was gaining minutes, gaining trust, gaining those reps. You know, you'd think that he would be a starter next season, and he's leaving. So I don't think you can count on anybody as being a sure thing to stay. Next question is from Adam K63. Did the K-State men's basketball staff mismanage the freshmen this past year? And do you believe they have learned from it?
I can't answer the second part. Gills, I'll take this one first. Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think there was opportunities to play them in games that weren't quite as competitive. I think there was opportunities to play them in games in which the veterans, the guys with experience, weren't getting it done. And I thought there was a couple games where you just shake them up and throw the young guys in there to bring a burst of energy, and maybe it'll wake up the old guys. So I did disagree with the way they use them, but I don't know how they would have learned from it, because every team's a different entity. Every team is constructed differently. And this gets back to the first question. Just because you were on last year's team and started to earn minutes, this year's team, more so than now than ever in college basketball, this year's team is a different beast. It's a different collection of players. You got to get reworked for those minutes. And I don't know if there's much to learn other than the fact that we just got to keep reinventing this program year in and year out, apparently.
Well, first things first, Tyler Perry, I think we can all agree, we would have loved to have seen him play the two for this team. And K-State, the staff, Day-Day Ames started to start for the last month of the season. So I would have liked to have maybe seen Day-Day start the entire season. Now, Quez Glover's injury maybe kind of threw a wrench in all those plans. But so with Day-Day specifically, I think that he should have been playing the one for a majority of the season and letting TP play the two, right? I think we can all agree on that. So Day-Day, towards the end of the year, got the minutes. So I don't know at that point if he was mismanaged, but early on, I think Day-Day could have played more than he did. And then RJ, I think that they did not give him the keys to do the things that he's capable of doing. I mean, he was pretty much a sharpshooter. His role given to him from the staff was essentially go out and hit shots. And I'm not going to say they didn't let him go out and make plays, but it just seemed to me like they just wanted the ball. Once it's in your hands, you're either passing it or you're shooting it, right? So, and then Mikaela Bridge, I know there were some off the court stuff maybe that maybe held him out of playing. And so I don't know if that's necessarily a mismanagement of his role or anything like that. I think that that's something long term that's going to be good for Buddy Rich, and he's sticking it out, right? And he's bought in with this program. And so that's all good. That's all good and all. But I think by and large, mismanaged during the year was one thing, but the way things went now in this portal cycle, I think that's where the mismanagement might have come in. These guys had no issue with the staff bringing in a guard, a veteran guard, a one or a two, to play the point guard or be a shooting guard, whatever that may be. They had, I can tell you guys, they had no issue with that. But when you start bringing in guard after guard after guard, that's when the problems start to come in for these guys, because they want a chance to play. They want a chance to compete. Day-Day and RJ, from my understanding, they did not feel like they were getting a fair chance at that. And they have to have, you know, the coaches have to give them a role or a sense of what their role might be. And if that's not being provided to them, well, all right. I'm not saying that Jerome Tang was forcing RJ and Day-Day out of the program. I'm not saying that, but it, from my understanding, I don't think that there is a clear defined role. You know, I'm not RJ Jones wasn't asking to start in this system next year. He just wanted to play 20, 25 minutes. And who knows what the role, who knows what the plan would have been if they would have stayed, but there was no plan at this point in time when they continue to bring in transfer after transfer. You know, Khalif Battle right now, as we're recording, he's not committed. Is he going to commit? Is he not? Who knows? I think we all think the answer is yes, but nothing's solidified there. Even if he doesn't commit, though, you know, there is no plan for this. They're just going to keep bringing in guys until the roster's full, right? They've got a number of open spots. And so that's where the frustration was, that, you know, just they don't want a red shirt, right? Because of what happened last season. Okay. RJ, you know, didn't play as much as he wanted. Same thing with Day-Day. Next year, if you red shirt or something like that, I think you could buy into that. You could buy into that if you were 100% certain that there wouldn't be those older guards brought in next year, the next portal cycle. But history is going to repeat itself. And you look at what's happening this offseason. I think they looked at it and said, there's just not going to be the opportunity to play, or maybe a fair chance to play. And so I don't think they ran away from the challenge. They just kind of looked at the numbers, only so many pieces of the pie to go around. And those minutes just probably weren't going to be there the way they wanted them to be.
Yeah, you look at in the season, I think Jerome Tang was very loyal to his core rotation. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to get outside of the guys that he felt he could trust. And that included, you know, not playing Mikayla Bridge very much, not playing RJ Jones very much. Day-Day got on the court, but obviously, as we've learned, he is leaving. So he was kind of loyal to the rotation in the season. He probably should have given the freshman a little more minutes, probably would have helped at least in their minds an idea of, you know, here's my role here. I'm going to stay and stick this out, get more minutes next year and, you know, continue the process. But they didn't play very much. So you have that, you know, not going for Jerome Tang. But then once it's time, you have players leaving and it's time to say, all right, you're my guys now. I'm going to count on you next season. Well, they get a couple pieces and, you know, like Gil said, everybody's happy, you know, no one's being recruited over anybody, but then the process keeps going. Like they keep going shopping and it's like, well, you know, it's gone completely one, you know, you didn't play them very much in the first season and they're like, okay, well now that everybody's gone, people are out of the way, I'm going to get to play. And then you bring in other people and you keep bringing in other people. I mean, with all due respect to Jerome Tang, he is telling his players he does not trust them and he wants them to leave. That is what he is saying by bringing in these guys. I mean,
well, you got to fill your roster.
Right. You got to fill your roster. But after, you know, when RJ Jones is expecting to play, Mikayla Bridge, he's staying, but I would not be surprised if he went into the transfer portal. I mean, I know that they're not, you know, the roster's fine at that position right now. And if they bring in another guy, I don't think he's going to be too worried about playing time. But
they're going to bring in a couple more guys.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if, Mikayla Bridge leaves too. I mean, it's just, this is what it's going to be every year. I think it's just, I don't know how you can recruit freshmen or kids out of high school in today's transfer portal era.
Okay. Let me back up and answer this question from the perspective of the coaches. If you look at how last season tracked, we all can agree that this team wasn't very good. And I would say this team wasn't good enough to make the NIT, honestly. But I think the coaches did a good enough job massaging what they had and, you know, kind of squeaking out games, all those overtime wins, flip them, and it's an utter disaster of a season. They were on the cusp of making the NCAA tournament, as well as on the cusp of total horrific record. I mean, they were just right in the middle. And so they kept playing what they thought was the mixture of players that would get them over the hump. And I would argue that that mixture of players was the hump that they couldn't get over. And they got them as far as that group of players was going to get them. But that is the luxury of looking at this postmortem. You know, we can see it now looking back over it. And in the heat of the battle, the flow of the season, they're just trying to beat this team. They beat Texas. Now let's go beat Iowa State. And we saw what happened. They just needed to kind of ride what they had through the end from their point of view. And I know now looking back, I think all of us wish they had played the younger guys. If it was going to be that kind of season to play the younger guys, and get them experience and, you know, get them better invested in the program. But as the season was going on, the coaches didn't know it was going to be that kind of season. They kept trying to the very end to get them over the hump.
One quick thing that I'll add with just the portal and stuff, RJ Jones and Day Day Ames and any younger player that you bring in from the high school ranks and they transfer out, you have the opportunity to develop them and mold them exactly into the player that you want, right? A guy like Cam Carter, who maybe didn't have the fundamentals, right? He started his career at LSU. And, you know, if you're bringing in older guys from the portal, they're going to have issues. Like Michigan, how many games did they win last season? Arkansas, a sub 500 record in the SEC. You know, UIC, CJ Jones from UIC. With all due respect, it's UIC. I don't know what their record was last year, but you're bringing in guys that you have to, you got to hope that what you can instill in them in a short summer, short offseason is going to pay off in the immediate future. Whereas if you're losing those guys, like we're seeing from the high school ranks, those are the types of players that you can develop. And specifically, you know, that's the player that you want them to be. Whereas now with these guys from the portal, you know, you got one, maybe 2 years, you know, you've got to be, but you know, I would challenge this staff. You look at the problems K-State had last season, a lot of that went into the fundamentals and stuff like that. So getting better at the small little details that when you have a guy redshirting or something like that, you know, Taj Manning, I'm not sure how high his ceiling is ever going to be at Kansas State, but he is the player that the staff wants, right? They brought him in. You know, he was a Bruce Weber recruit, but then he redshirted, didn't play a whole lot, but he's still here. And so he's getting better in their weight room and their practice facility rather than somebody else's.
True.
Next question is from KSU Royals Cat. What does college basketball and the NCAA need to do to get players to stick around 4 years with the school that they originally signed with out of high school? And whatever that is it even possible for that to happen?
I don't know there's anything the NCAA can do. I think from a greater perspective, they need to wrestle with the entire transfer portal NIL process. And they're scared out of their minds to do so. They fear it. They keep getting beaten in court because there isn't enough representation of the interests of the student athletes involved, and they don't solve that. That's the first step to solving anything else. If the players don't have a voice in this, the courts aren't going to allow it, period. And that's become very clear. So that's just a reality that coaches and ADs and, you know, conference administrators all the way up to the NCAA itself has to realize that you have to give these student athletes a vote. I don't know if that, or a voice. I don't know if that means a union, but maybe it does. It probably means some kind of collective bargaining. Those are the things that we refer to in professional sports. So we're kind of at professional sports now. And I don't think that's where any of us wanted to be or thought this would end up. You knew the second the NIL was incorporated that it opened up the door to extreme cheating, and that's what's happening. The NIL is to profit from your name, image, and likeness, not to just get a chunk of money to come play at a school. But from the court's perspective, there's no problem with that. So you're going to have to figure out how to get this under, you know, reeled in for the players to have any chance for any kind of stability in the programs, and certainly the coaches can't keep sustaining this. I say it all the time. The NIL as it's currently going is not sustainable. Alums won't keep giving at this amount. You can't be spending, $10 million a year to build rosters at your program from outside money, because all that outside money is not coming inside. First step is the NCAA has to move the collectives in-house, get this gray money out, and understand where the money's coming from and where it's going.
Yeah, I think you're going to need, if you want high school players to stick at a school, I won't even say 4 years, I'll say 2 years. I think you give, make a CBA, players union, and then you have guys signed to your contracts, and then you get to re-up after 2 years. I think, if you want to not completely get rid of the transfer portal or, free agency, so to speak, in college sports, I don't think you can, at least the way that, the NCAA is today, especially with players wanting to go pro after a certain point. I get that this is kind of professionalizing amateur sports at this point, but without some sort of contract that locks both parties in, you can't just kick a guy off the team without paying him his dues. I mean, if you want to get rid of a player from a team, or, a player wants to be released, put in some clauses into the contract there. But I think that there needs to be as much of a commitment from the school to the player financially as much as there is a commitment from the player to play to the school.
Well said.
I agree.
Well said.
Okay. We'll keep getting into some NIL here from Jim Cat. The portal and or NIL seems to have destroyed the team concept for basketball. Do we now just cheer for the coaches? They seem to be the only ones that are there for more than a year or two.
Well, Jerome Tang said it, you cheer for the uniform. Even if they're hired guns for a year, they represent your school. It sucks. At Kansas State, there's been a culture of, the players are clearly students. They don't sit above anyone in the hierarchy on campus. And I think it's turned into a special place. As a side note, Bill Walker, who now goes by Henry, what horrible choices he got for names. Bill or Henry are your choices. But he goes by Henry Walker now, just tweeted, and I interacted with him, that the only place he really misses is Manhattan, Kansas. You're not going to hear that from any of these players that are wrapped up in the NIL and are here just to play hoops and, do enough schooling to get by. It's unfortunate. But as I've said repeatedly now, the NIL and the portal are impacting basketball at an alarming higher rate than football. And it sucks in football. So I don't know what 2 times sucks is for basketball. What's this? Double sucks? I don't know. It's just horrible what's happening in college basketball. But here we are.
You can go, Gils.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Zach.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's about cheering for the coaches either. I think it's you're cheering for the uniform. You're cheering, the fans are the only thing that are going to be the same year after year. There's not very many fans, at least locally in Kansas, locally to Manhattan, that are cheering for Jerome Tang right now and will stop cheering for Kansas State when Jerome Tang leaves, or Chris Klieman for that matter.
Yep.
Everyone is bought in and they're invested. And, I think that back to kind of what I said previously, if you lock, players into contracts with the university, you are playing for university. We can do whatever with the coach. The coach can leave, whatever, but you are here. I think that if you clean some of this up with written contracts, I think you you fix at least some of what the problem has been.
Agreed.
I mean, the two players, I don't necessarily disagree with the point here, but the two players probably in most fans' eyes under Jerome Tang who had the best impact, right? The two players that fans fell in love with were Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson. Those were the two leaders of an Elite Eight squad. Both those guys came via the transfer portal. I know Marquise Noel technically was at K-State before the previous staff, but at the end of the day, he was from the transfer portal. So you can still fall in love with these guys. Tyler Perry had his fair share of frustrations for us, but the buzzer beaters, he had countless clutch shots for this team last year as well. And so you could still fall in love with these guys from the portal. Now, obviously, it's not nearly the same as a guy like Barry Brown or Jacob Pullen or Rodney Magruder that are there for 4 years and they are just the locker room leaders. And you just know that when you watch them as freshmen, when you see that Barry Brown misses the NCAA tournament his first year, and then the next year they creep in and make it in the first four, and then the next year they go to the Elite Eight, and then the next year they win the Big 12. Those days are gone, and it sucks. I mean, let's be blunt. You're not going to see that anymore. However, you can still win with those guys from the portal. It's just if you want to look at it, you know, glass half full, okay, you don't have to go through that lows, the valleys, right? You're only going to have highs, assuming that you can click and get and hit in the portal and not miss and get the guys you want. You can have a championship caliber roster every year. Whereas if you're going through the high school ranks, then maybe you're inevitably going to have a down year every once in a while. Right. So, I mean, but that's assuming that everything works out well. And that kind of ties back to the previous point that if K-State staff can hammer in those fundamentals on these guys from the portal and it all works out, maybe you're not going to miss RJ Jones and Day-Day Ames, but that's assuming everything works out, right? I think RJ and Day-Day were much safer options, but in this staff's eyes, the ceiling is a little higher with these guys from the portal, but there's a high risk, high reward.
Agree. I mean, we all think you need a four-year relationship to love a player, but I just brought up Bill Walker, who was here only a year, and people still think fondly of him. And look at the women's basketball program with Gabby Gregory. She was here for 2 years. And she's one of the all-time favorites for fans in the women's program. So, you know, fans get to know kids pretty quickly. But Tyler Perry was really popular with the students. Everyone recognized his struggles. He embraced his struggles. But he still was a good person that the fans generally loved. And I think that's something cool about K-State. It goes beyond just, are you a good player? It's, are you a good person? And if you're that, you're going to be cherished around here, whether you're here for a year or two.
Well, it's the players that Jerome Tang and his staff are going to go after, right? Like even Desi Stills was more of a role player, but he was feisty, energetic, and the way he played, fans fell in love with him. And yes, I have no doubt in my mind that Jerome Tang and his staff are not going to stop going after guys like that. You know, with all due respect to Bruce Weber or something, you know, maybe the guys that he would have brought in from the portal, you're not going to necessarily fall in love with them, so to speak, if that makes sense. But the guys that Tang is bringing in, the way that they play and the way that they win, the way that they want to win, you know, you are going to fall in love with them if they are winning, right?
Yeah, right. And my apologies for me looking down. I'm working as I listen. We spent so much time messing with equipment. I didn't get all the stuff I needed to get done. But
are we good on time for the first half, or do you want another one?
Go bring on another
one. Okay, we'll bring on the last question. This is from WCAT. Is the current state of college athletics sustainable?
No, period. It's not. It's not. And this is the gold rush. And bless the players that are going to benefit from the gold rush. But all gold rushes end because the gold goes away. And I think we're getting there. We're going to get there. I don't see how this can be sustained more than one more year before the alumni that are giving the money to keep the star quarterback and to lure in the leading scorer on the basketball team. I don't see how they'll be able to or have a desire to keep doing it over and over unless they're a person blessed with unlimited wealth. You know, I mean, if I would advise K-State maybe to make Elon Musk an honorary graduate, because that's the kind of money you need to really sustain this. And there's not many T. Boone Pickens that are that invested in the sports, or I can't Smith, the FedEx guy at Memphis. If you have that, you're at a huge advantage.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. Like you said, there's probably a year left in the current model, if you want to even call it a model. I mean, there's no real rules and regulations. It's the Wild West. It's outlaws. You know, I don't really know exactly where I'm going with this, but, you know, it's we've talked about previously in the podcast, NIL needs to come in-house. You need to put players under contract or do whatever else. You know, if you want to go for broke this next couple of years, and if you have unlimited money, and if you know that, you know, you're not going to be able to use that unlimited money, now's the time to go buy a national championship if you think that you can get one. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think that there is a better time to, if you just want to throw money away, I guess, go after a national championship, because I think that eventually all of the universities will get together and say, hey, we have to come up with a salary cap, or we have to limit this, or else we're never, you know, going to be the same again. We're not going to exist if we keep going this way.
But so, then you're going to get back to square one with your blue bloods or whoever funneling money under the table.
And you know what?
It started, right?
At that point, maybe they should just break off and go play in their Super League. I mean, is this, if this is what K-State has to deal with every year, is it fun being part of it? Sure, the money's great. It's great exposure for the university. But do you want to be competing with dollars instead of competing for national championships on the field with players you can recruit and develop on your own?
I agree. I spent one of my weekend days watching Tombstone.
You couldn't even remember them.
I just looked at it, folks. I just literally looked up Tombstone and then said Deadwood. That's how good my memory is right now. The short-term memory is gone. And it almost feels like college basketball has turned into the town of Tombstone. I mean, it's just wild, untamed. And eventually it needs to be tamed or it's going to collapse and just not exist anymore. I'm not taking any vacations to Tombstone because it just went away. And that's the way college basketball is. And I fear it collapsing upon itself. They've got to figure out how to do this better with the players. But the key here is not to focus on the players who are getting $1 million to play a season, but the players like Day-Day Ames who want to play and their NIL wasn't nearly that high. And they want to know how they can have a better system that works for all players and not just a select few. That's it for the first half of the PowerCat podcast, I guess. I guess we think we're going to come back for the second half. We're not real sure based on everything else that's happening with my equipment and the power surge we had, but we made it through the first half as far as we know. And we'll be back right after this break with more from Gills, Fitz, and Zach. Although Gills might leave. I don't know what's up with him. We'll discuss.
We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Please visit The Fridge Wholesale Liquor, located at the corner of Claflin and Westport Road in Manhattan, Kansas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the show. Let's return to the Cats and Dogs studio.
Welcome back to the PowerCat podcast. Did I play the music? Nope. I was wondering about Gills. Gills, are you good on time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would never leave.
That's not true. If you need to leave, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm good. We're good.
Okay. More of your questions from Wabash Station. Here is Zach Carlson.
We talk about the draft here.
Oh, cool.
So from Jay Boland, PSU, how good does it feel as K-Staters to have 3 draft picks? And for Mid-Tame PB, did the number of cats drafted meet your expectations?
Here's my simple philosophy on draft picks. They are a reflection of the NFL quality of your roster. For example, Deuce Vaughn isn't a 6th-round pick in a college draft. He's a 1st-round pick. But he did get drafted in the 6th round last year. And you look at a program like Texas or any of those SEC programs and the number of players they're putting into the league that represents, they're just getting better players. K-State has always achieved with less and played at the highest level possible, sometimes the very highest levels. But if you go back and look at those Bill Snyder teams that were so good in the late 90s and into the early 2000s. A lot of NFL players were on those teams. A lot of dudes. They may not have been 5 stars or 4 stars out of high school, but they turn themselves into NFL draft picks. And that's a reflection. It's a good way to look back and see how much talent was really on a team. And, you know, through the years, Texas has had a lot of draft picks, but not good teams. That tells you also about the stability of the program. Now, Sark has changed that. He cashed in the talent and won a Big 12 title. And it's been a long time coming for Texas. But for this to continue, K-State needs to not just recruit at a high level, the highest level possible, but continue to develop the Ben Sennett, a guy that didn't even get a scholarship offer from a FBS program coming out of high school. Maybe he would have a hockey scholarship, in all honesty, coming out of what his background was. But he came to K-State, walked on, and by God, he took every advantage there and made the most of it, and ends up a second-round NFL pick after his junior year. So in theory, Bennett stuck around for another year and had one more big season. He might have been a first-round pick, but he chose wisely. He tacked on an extra year to his NFL career at the end, basically, is what he did, because eventually your body says, I'm done with this league. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, 2.5. Three is probably about the over-under I would set on players drafted. You know, Khalid Duke, you probably think was an option, you know, as being maybe the fourth player. But, you know, KT barely snuck into the draft, too. So
I'm happy for
him. Yeah, that's really cool for him. Definitely deserves it. But, it feels good to have three guys picked, just, 4 years now since the streak ended. So, you know, it feels... You know, you can look at the draft list throughout the years and you see it kind of go down as the Snyder years come to an end. And then that last, you know, after Klieman's first years when the streak ended, and there weren't really any guys that were stars for K-State. And that's just kind of the reality of what K-State football was at the end of Snyder 2.0. But now you see the depth is starting to come back and, you know, there's stars, you know, starting to emerge. And, you know, I think that this is proof that the program's trajectory is trending upward. And I think that we'll start to see more than three guys every year get drafted.
I think Dallas got really good value with Cooper Beebe.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Exactly. They're just getting all these guys from K-State with great value. But you go back to last year, like Cooper Beebe's draft stock kind of fell a little bit, right, by staying that one extra year, right? So
you could argue that, yeah.
No, that's not a knock on him. I just think it kind of happened naturally with the way things pan out. But so again, I think that if maybe he went last year, he would have been a second rounder, maybe a late first rounder, who knows? But Dallas got some good value there. But the point with Sennett's just awesome. Like you can recruit all you want. You can get those five stars and whatever. If you can develop guys that are walk-ons into being draft picks, I mean, to hell with recruiting. No, I wouldn't go that far. But, I mean, you can get those guys in-house, right? I mean, that just speaks volumes to what K-State's program is about, right?
But let's be honest, those preferred walk-ons are recruited. True. So that's very true. And if any of you have time on your hands and want to explore this, I would find this very interesting. Doing a graph of number of wins, you know, in one line per season, as compared to the number of draft picks in that same season in another graph line. I wonder if those match up for most programs. I certainly like to track it with K-State. Maybe not even draft picks, but maybe guys in the league that go, you know, that actually stick on rosters, if you can find that number, because we've seen it happen. Last year, Echo Boydeau didn't get picked, but he signed as a free agent. By God, he's still with the Chiefs, and he's going to start playing here in a year or two.
Next question is from Mac 90. Were you surprised to see Ben Sennett get drafted before Cooper Beebe?
No. If you'd asked me who I thought would get picked before, it would have been Cooper Beebe. But I guess that knock on his short arms actually stuck. But he's going to have a long career with short arms and play a lot of snaps. I think the NFL gets too caught up in that nonsense. And, you know, they could have done the same with Ben Hill. He's not ideal height. He needs to be a little taller. But they get so caught up on that, they sometimes forget you got to get some dudes. And, you know, guys that come to work every day and compete through the games, compete for positions, and get the entitlement out of the locker room. I'm really happy for Ben. I mean, another self-made player. And I know that, you know, cuts out what the coaches did for him, but he went to work. And so did Cooper. I mean, coming in, we knew he was good, but he turned into an absolutely elite offensive lineman, maybe the best in K-State history, which is not a knock on guys like Nick Lecky and other people who have played
Brian in the Hanley. League for a long
time. Brian Hanley. You know, some other guys that have had long careers, including Cornelius Lucas, who was an okay college player. He literally got picked because of the intangibles. He's a giant man, and he made the most of his opportunity too.
KT Levison could be that type of player for the Rams or wherever he goes.
Yep.
Cornelius is a little bit of a journeyman, but you look at his game log, by the end of the season, he's usually starting, covering for somebody that got injured. So, yep. You know, he finds his way onto the field. I don't know how many straight seasons he's had at least one start, but you know, he's kind of a spot starter type of guy. He's going to play a decent amount. So it'll be interesting to see if a guy like KT is like that. But I think, you know, we thought that Ben Sinnott and Cooper Beebe would probably go around the same spot. So it's hard to say you're surprised that Ben gets picked over Cooper, but I wasn't expecting it when it came, you know, when the pick came, when it did. So, you know, good for Ben. I loved the Commanders tweeting out his hockey highlights and everybody in the replies saying, can you just send him over to the Caps?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big man on skates. Yeah. Look, I don't follow hockey. I don't know what the size of your average hockey player is, but my goodness, Ben Sinnott coming at you on skates is one of my nightmares, I would think. Yeah.
Ben Sinnott's got such a high ceiling because I feel like we haven't necessarily seen everything out of him, right? And that's not a knock on Cooper Beebe, but that's a very safe pick, right? You know what you're getting. Maybe his ceiling isn't as high as somebody else, but you are damn sure you're going to get a guy that's just going to be solid with Cooper Beebe. Whereas Sinnott, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, he had such a tight connection with Will Howard, right? Those guys were tight. To see him playing a different offense with a different quarterback, can he replicate that, right? I think that's going to be maybe one of the bigger question marks for Ben Sinnott in Washington. But a new quarterback there drafted at number two, right? Like, so there's the chances there for him to just be the guy that you draft in your fantasy football league, a surefire tight end and stow that away, you know? And so he can be that guy, but I think there's maybe just a few more unknowns or question marks with, because BB's what, 2-3 years older than Sinnott, right? So
Look, I'm all in on Ben Sinnott. I really am. I as a Chiefs fan, I wish the Chiefs had been able to pick him, but they weren't going to use a tight end pick that early. Because
they have a tight end.
They've got a couple. He's actually a really good singer, I think, because there's a bunch of people that called Swifties that follow him now. I wish Ben had landed somewhere where he had a Travis Kelce to learn tricks from. This is what you do to get rid of this guy. This is what, because you can tell by Kelce playing, he's getting pretty savvy and he knows what works on certain people and what doesn't work. And he finds a way open. And so does Ben Sinnott. So I'm going to have a lot of fun watching his career.
I think more so I'd rather him have a veteran quarterback like Sam Laporta going to Detroit and having, it's not Matthew Stafford. I about said that. I can't think of his name.
Goff.
Yeah. Jared Goff. Yeah. So, you know, Sam Laporta was, you know, all pro last year as a rookie. I mean, I think that Ben Sinnott can probably be that, but it'd be nice if he had a veteran quarterback throwing him the football.
Yep, true.
Next question is from Call Me T22. Moving to college football, what does Dylan Edwards' commitment mean for the offense this year? What does it mean for opposing defensive coordinators this year?
You know, when you wanted the bike at Christmas as a little kid, and then you showed up and it wasn't just a bike, it was something really cool, and all your other friends are going to be jealous you got the bike. That's Dylan Edwards. I mean, he's just multifaceted. Fits this offense and what K-State not only does, but let's be blunt, needs to do with its offense, creating one-on-one opportunities at a high rate for its players. and putting the emphasis on the players who win those one-on-one battles, whether it's Deuce Vaughn or Avery Johnson, and now Dylan Edwards. Having two of those dudes on your roster, and DJ wins one-on-one battles by running over people and, you know, kind of just powering past them. You got a bunch of people now, and I think we're going to see some of that from the receivers. Jace Brown did it last year, that win one-on-one battles. And if you have a bunch of guys on offense that do that and an offense designed to create those opportunities, you're going to win a lot of football games. And adding Dylan Edwards into the tools that Connor Riley and Matt Wells can use is absolutely horrific for opposing coaches. It's going to be a nightmare. As long as these guys stay healthy, everyone's going to have a blast watching the K-State offense.
I think it fills that second running back need. It feels like now they have a solidified second option. Or, you know, if DJ, for whatever reason, goes down, Dylan Edwards is the perfect person to replace him.
And it gives Joe Jackson another year to grow.
Yeah.
You know, there's other young running backs, but that's the one that probably would be the backup if they hadn't gotten Dylan Edwards. And I think he's going to see the field because he too can – he's got some special skills to him. How they balance these running backs and use them while making sure DJ gets fed, because you need to feed him because he sets a tone. He sets a physical tone with your offensive line about how you're going to do business and makes you worry about things going on between the tackles so that you can have benefits outside the tackles with your speed and playmakers.
Yields?
I think Yields agrees with everything I just said. Yeah, he's nodded. He's nodding. He's nodding. I got the Gills
AJ Hawk on the McAfee show.
Sitting there. I agree.
On the camera.
What a great job. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
You know, there isn't really a question about this, but, you know, there's been kind of some negative feedback, I guess, on K-State adding Dylan Edwards after he committed, decommitted, then committed to Notre Dame, decommitted, committed to Colorado. Transfer from Colorado. Now he's at K-State. And everybody's kind of worried, oh, he might do this again if he doesn't get his NIL money or does whatever. It's like, I really don't think that. I think that that's out of his system. He's going to be in a comfortable environment with his friends that he's played football with all his life. It does feel like he is at home. I don't foresee him being any sort of, you know, drama queen in the locker room. Like, this is... You know, I think he's here to stay, and I think that he's going to, you know, keep his head down and commit to his role on this football team.
I agree. Look, everyone through their freshman year of college goes through different experiences. If I had received a scholarship to go to Northwestern or Syracuse, a couple schools I considered because I wanted to major in journalism, I might have ended up there. And honestly, I wasn't ready for that. I would have ended up back in the state of Kansas. And, you know, I think he needed to go experience life away from the comfort zone he has here. And he realized that he really wanted that. He needs that. And there's nothing wrong with that. He went out into the big world, tested his water, you know, tested things at Notre Dame, found out they weren't fully truthful to him in the recruiting process about the work he had to do academically to get into Notre Dame. Felt kind of like he'd been misled, went to Colorado because of, you know, what they call Uncle Dion being out there. And he also eventually felt misled. And he said to himself, who has never misled me and been honest every time? And that's where he's at. And some people are like, he's just going to leave. I don't think so. I don't see that happening. I think he went out and had a life experience that told him, you know what? Playing football and living in Kansas ain't so bad. And he's back to where, you know, what he would consider home.
One of the first interactions that I had real quick was with Dylan Edwards. I was with Wally out in Salina for one of those camps, and just talking to him for just a brief minute seemed like a real good kid and had his head on straight. So I think it was a little saddening or frustrating to see him go out and bounce around all these schools and everything that transpired. But at the end of the day, he's, you know, like everyone's been saying, he's kind of back where he belongs. And I understand the fear of maybe that happening again, but like you guys are saying, this is home. We talked about it with Bill Walker in the first half of this show, right? Like, Manhattan's just a special place, and he's going to get to know these coaches even more than he already knows them. And they've been truthful to him throughout this process. So, you know, you hope that this is the final stop before maybe the NFL for Dylan Edwards.
Very good.
Last question of the podcast, real quick, from Mac90. Where do you believe the backfield of Avery, DJ, and Dylan ranks in the Big 12 and in the country?
I'm going to be blunt here. I cover Kansas State, and I get familiar enough with other teams when I have to, preparing for a game, preparing for a podcast, now that I'm doing Big 12 Insiders with Brian Hanley. Brian Hanley would be a great person to answer this question because he does his own channel is dedicated to sports in general, NFL and all of college. He does an amazing amount of research. But I will say this, as players fit into a system, I don't know who would have a better group of players fitting into what their system's about than what K-State has. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that they're easily top three today. And I think midway through the season, very well could be the number one in the conference. I don't know about the country, but, you know, with how high our hopes are with Avery Johnson, with how high our hopes are, we love tongue twisters on this show. DJ Giddens having high expectations. Dylan Edwards, we know what he can do. You know, the ceiling is high for those three individuals individually. So when you put them all together, I can't imagine it ranking very lowly.
You get wonder powers. Gills, any thoughts?
I agree.
Okay. Gills, the wisdom was shared. Gills agreed with it. And that's it for the PowerCat podcast. We appreciate you watching, listening, or enjoying the Braille edition. Gills will be working that with a little hammer and a little pointy thing. What's that called? I don't know. Who knows? I'm just babbling. That's it for the podcast. Make sure you stop by the Fridge Wholesale Liquor whenever you are in town.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. New season streaming May 17th exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.